You're listening to The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
Comrades, we are here today on April 26th. This is the host of the Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and I'm here to do a solo show today, but I'm going to be joined by my good friend Sven tomorrow and Thursday, of course, and then John Friend on Friday. And I'm planning another interview for next week with another fellow nationalist, so lots of great content to look forward to. And again, thank you all so much for your kind words and your constructive criticisms, because as we're building this show, as we're building the network, it's always great to be able to get feedback. And I couldn't do this without you. So thank you guys so much, as always, for being so supportive and listening in today. So I wanted to talk about a topic that really kind of goes back to what I was talking about with Father Raphael, and a thread that's been going back, you know, for several weeks now, and discussing, you know, both history and, of course, with theology, to understand that the post-war period and the pre-war period of 19 centuries of the Christian faith are two very separate different eras. It's like when I was a Catholic, you know, there was almost, 900 years of the Catholic Church from the Great Schism to Vatican II, and then the post-Vatican II period. There's a very distinct mark where globalism and internationalism really got involved. And I wanted to start today by actually reading a quote and talking a little bit about the Russian Orthodox Church outside of Russia. And for those of you who don't know, the ROKOR, as it's known, actually had an office in National Socialist Germany in Berlin, that it was actually given money and support to rehabilitate churches in liberated areas of the Soviet Union, and it was actually given support by the National Socialist State, because the Russian Orthodox Church outside of Russia, it goes back to the Bolshevik Revolution, and the White Russians, of course, were those that were fighting against the Bolsheviks. You know, they were defeated, especially after Western capitalists flooded money, flooded support and arms to the Bolsheviks, who then, of course, murdered the Tsar and defeated the White Russians. So many of the White Russians, of course, came to America, but they also went into Europe, especially in Germany. And they were told by the first patriarch that was brought back. There were several centuries there, going back to Peter, Tsar Peter, that there was no patriarch. There was an imperial synod. So the first patriarch who was brought back was right during the Bolshevik Revolution, and that was Patriarch Tikhon. And Patriarch Tikhon told his people on January 19th, 1918, this quote: "By the power given to us by God, we forbid you," speaking to all Russians, "to approach the mysteries of Christ. We anathematize you. If only you bear Christian names, and although by birth you belong to the Orthodox Church, we adjure all of you," speaking to the Bolsheviks, "faithful children of the Orthodox Church, not to enter into any communion with such outcasts of the human race." So the church knew very quickly that the Bolsheviks, of course, were an enemy of traditional Russia. They were an enemy. You know, the motto of the Tsar was orthodoxy, autocracy, and nationality. And the Bolsheviks were opposed to all of those things. Of course, they would commit horrendous atrocities against the Christian populations. They got rid of the monarchy, and they believed in internationalism. They believed in no national borders, that workers of the world unite to bring about this proletariat revolution, and they would destroy nationalism, national identity, and language. And of course, we would see that when the Bolsheviks would commit the genocide in Ukraine, killing millions of Ukrainians because they didn't want a separation between the Russians and the Ukrainians. They wanted to wipe out anyone they thought might be able to promote this nationalist spirit. So the patriarch went ahead and anathematized all the Bolsheviks. He said that if you say you're an Orthodox Christian and you're a supporter of the Bolsheviks, you're not part of the church. We anathematize you. And his last letter, before he was taken into Bolshevik custody, where he would be tortured and eventually killed, was to tell the White Russians, to tell the Russian people, not to listen to anything that came out of the Bolshevik-controlled church, that the people must allow the faith to maintain, and to ignore the calls of internationalism, ignore the calls to return home, because, of course, anyone who did would likely be tortured or killed. So we get the Russian Orthodox Church outside of Russia, which established itself as a nationalist outpost for traditional orthodoxy, specifically in usually Western Europe. So they actually worked very heavily hand in hand with the National Socialists and the different nationalist movements of the 1930s and 40s in the battle against Bolshevism, that they truly believed that the Soviet Union had to be overthrown, that it had to be destroyed, the Bolsheviks needed to be thrown out, and the Russian people be liberated. And that's why you can see many, many pictures and video of Russian women and Ukrainian women and men who are blessing the German soldiers as they're marching east, who are literally weeping that for the first time in years, the church bells rang when German troops would come into a town or into a city, and the Bolsheviks and their commissars would be forced back to the east, that people would rejoice. The priest would finally be allowed to wear his cassock and ring the church bells. And that was a symbol not only of political liberation, but also religious liberation. And I wanted to read, we're coming up into Pascha for the Orthodox Church. This upcoming weekend is our Easter. So for all of those on the Western calendar, we're finally catching up with you. It's going to be time for Easter. And I wanted to read a quick quote from one of the metropolitans of Rokor, who's addressing the Russian Liberation Movement soldiers in 1944, trying to encourage them in their fight against Bolshevism. The idea of the international coalition where you had Catholics, you had Protestants, you had Orthodox, and you had non-religious. You had all sorts of people who saw internationalism for the enemy that it was to all of us. So this is the Metropolitan of Rokor, who is speaking to Russian Liberation Army troops under General Vlasov. And he said, "In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. From ancient times, there has existed such a custom in the Russian land. Before undertaking any good work, especially a collective work, they used to ask the blessing of God on it. And you have gathered here, dear brothers and fellow countrymen, you workers and inspirer of the Russian national movement, thereby demonstrating the historical link of the great work of the liberation of Russia with the actions of our fathers and great-grandfathers. We now are all united by one feeling, a feeling of deadly irreconcilability with the Bolshevik evil and a flaming desire to destroy it on the Russian land. For we know that as long as it reigns there, no rational human life is possible, no spiritual movement forward. As long as this evil threatens both our fatherland and the whole of Europe, death and destruction will be established everywhere. And insofar as you, dear brothers and sisters, are striving to crush this terrible evil, you are doing a truly patriotic, even more than that, universal work. And the church cannot fail to bless your great and holy beginning. Dear brothers and sisters, let us all unite around this liberation movement of ours. Let each of us struggle on this path and help the common great work of the liberation of our homeland until this terrible evil of Bolshevism falls and our tormented Russia is raised from her bed." And that for me, of course, is always inspirational. It's always good to be able to see clergy on our side. But it's often overlooked that the millions of Russians and Eastern Europeans that united together in the struggle against Bolshevism. You know, there's a reason why the Bolsheviks, to get the soldiers in the Red Army to charge forward, would have to set up machine guns behind their soldiers and say, if you retreat, if you don't charge forward, we'll kill you, and then we'll send your families to the gulag and likely kill them. That, the Red Army, I don't doubt their sacrifices, and of course their heroism, many of them. But overwhelmingly, the Russian people were not in love with Bolshevism, because Bolshevism was, of course, forced on them from the top down. It was forced by by the Jews within Russia, with their financial support in the West, because, of course, capitalism and communism battled together on the same side. That it was a forced system on these people. And that's, of course, why Stalin, when he realized he had to stop the persecution of the church, he had to get rid of the theory of internationalism and talk about the Rodina, talk about the motherland, to be able to motivate Russians to be able to fight, because no one would fight for internationalism. No one would fight for atheism. No one would fight for communism. And no matter how many men were shot by the Bolsheviks, you would have, so many men that would try and shirk their duty because they knew they weren't fighting for their mothers. They weren't fighting for their fathers. They were being forced and drafted to fight for a system that actively hated everything about traditional Russia. So, to be able to see, we often forget the sacrifices of the men of the Russian Liberation Army and Russian Liberation Movement that united together to be able to fight Bolshevism. The idea of the international coalition, it wasn't just a German war against the Soviet Union and the Allies. It wasn't just a German and Italian war. It was a war of nationalists, of multiple faiths, of multiple political ideologies that united together. And that's what brings us into today. That's what's so interesting, as they say, those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And the internationalists continually think that they can remake men and women, that they can fundamentally change the desires of a national community, that they can take us away from our fatherland and our culture and our God, that they think that they can remake us in their own image. And it's impossible. That these Bolsheviks of today might call themselves capitalists, they might call themselves globalists, but it's the same forces that are fighting to destroy national identity around the entire globe. And that's something that that will never change. The battle has always been nationalism versus globalism, and that's the battle we're fighting today. That that's where we need to be able to unite. The idea of the Germans, for instance, uniting with the Japanese, a different ethnicity, a different religion, different structure of government, but people that realize that the growing forces of globalism, of British imperialism at the time, was a war on the sovereignty of free peoples. And again, it's always the hilarious thing to be able to read the history books, to see the Allies as supposed liberators, when what were they actually doing? They were going to increase territorial gains. I mean, Churchill himself talked about they need to preserve the British Empire, and that the German Empire shouldn't be allowed to rise because they wanted to hold on to their territorial ambitions. And that's the real battle, globalism versus nationalism. And that's where we see today, for instance, representatives from Golden Dawn not too long ago were meeting with representatives with Hezbollah in Lebanon. And I was just reading yesterday about a delegation of Golden Dawn members that was sent to Syria to be able to meet with representatives of Bashar al-Assad's government to be able to increase cooperation between nationalist factions, that this war impacts every single person around the world. Regardless of who you are, if you believe in freedom, if you believe in sovereignty and self-determination, if you believe in the ability to worship the way you desire and to be able to raise your children with your values, globalism is an enemy to you. That, you know, if any of my listeners are from separate ethnic groups, they aren't European, this battle impacts you just as much as it impacts me. That every country that falls to the globalists is another country that's enemy territory. And all peoples need to be able to organize together and to be able to fight. And this is something, going back to the discussion of the church, that was well understood. That for those who don't know, that Mount Athos is considered one of the holiest sites in Holy Orthodoxy. It's a small island that has had monasteries for centuries on it, off the coast of Greece. And the monks of Mount Athos actually appealed to Adolf Hitler and the National Socialists to become the defenders of this holy mountain. And they actually, there's a Time magazine article from I believe like 1941 or 1942, where they discussed how that not a single item was looted from the monasteries, that everything was protected, everyone was kept safe. And within one of the monasteries, they had, of course, their icon wall, their iconostasis in a church. And then to the side, they had a picture of their bishop. And then they had a picture of Adolf Hitler. And how these monks were telling Time magazine reporters about how that Adolf Hitler and the National Socialists were doing the Lord's work by fighting the Bolsheviks, that they saw Bolshevism as a form of war against Christianity, because of course it is. I mean, the terror that was seen in Spain, for instance, during the Spanish Civil War, that when the Reds were able to, when the anarchists were able to, they would blow churches up, they would murder clergy, they would rape nuns, they were waging a pathological, hatred-driven war against Christianity and European civilization to be able to bring about internationalism. Now, again, the symbols might have changed in the current era, but it doesn't change the fact that this is what the enemy was fighting for, that they have been fighting against Christendom, they've been fighting against European identity as a whole, and they've been fighting against self-determination. You know, when they declared an economic boycott of the Germans, just as they were declaring economic boycotts against the Russians today, as Father Raphael and I were talking about yesterday, that it really goes to tell you that the struggle has not fundamentally changed. You know, as the I believe it was Plato who said that only the dead have seen the end of war. And this is a war that will be seen for all generations, that I believe we can win this struggle and be able to secure self-determination for our children and ourselves. But as long as there are globalists, as long as these elements like cancer are able to reside within the planet, there will always be conflict. And, you know, Mel Gibson, when he got himself into a little bit of trouble, and talked about the Jews being behind all the world's wars. Well, let's look at globalism really is one of the number one causes of wars around the planet, because whether it's even in places like Africa where you have tribal conflicts, that in many cases, these tribal groups are fighting over a very limited amount of resources, as you have multinational corporations like Apple using child slave labor and all sorts of things to mine resources to build the latest gadgets in Chinese sweatshops than to sell to us here in the United States and around the world, that that these multinational corporations are waging a war with their globalist bankers, I mean, the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, and all these programs that say they were designed to rebuild Latin America, rebuild Africa, rebuild all these places around the world. What they've actually done is had an elaborate scheme to be able to loot and destroy everything that that these countries have, to be able to get them in debt and get them through usury, to be able to owe more money than they can pay back. And it just loots the country. It's a globalist Ponzi scheme that at the end of the day, the people end up suffering for. It's the same in the United States with the Federal Reserve System, taking control of our financial abilities and then looting trillions of dollars at this point from the American people to be able to go into the offshore bank accounts and the private accounts of these international bankers. So many of these conflicts that some might not on the surface be as clear as the USSR and the Western powers against the Axis, but so many of the conflicts today that even social and economic are seen to be tied back to globalism, because globalism loves when we fight one another. It loves when they can make people so desperate they wage wars against their brothers in the country over, or to promote racial hatred. Because if we're pointing guns at each other, if we're fighting one another, if we're having animosity towards one another, then we're not really realizing who is pulling the strings. You know, the reaction, you know, as I saw, the Austrian Freedom Party had its best election results in Austria, and they're not as nationalist as I would want, but they're a rather good party, and they really scare the establishment. That it was majority driven through feelings on the refugee crisis, where hundreds of thousands of refugees have been pouring into Austria. But we need to remember that, you know, while we need to keep our people safe, maintain our culture, maintain healthy demographics, at the same time, why are all these people coming here? It's the George Soroses of the world. It's these globalists that have promoted wars to destabilize almost every single nation in the Middle East, that have destroyed these countries, blown them to pieces, and then they're the ones who tell these people to come to Europe. They're the ones that buy off our politicians to accept the demographic displacement of our people. And it's totally justified to be frustrated with the refugees and the immigrants. But at the end of the day, if the globalists weren't there, these people would have countries that were still standing that they could live in. That if the globalists weren't involved, our politicians wouldn't have been so corrupt and bought off to work against the will of the people. That we need to remember, if there's ever a group to hate, it's the internationalists. And a war against the internationalists, as the monks of Mount Athos said that the National Socialists were doing, to wage war against the internationalists is to do the Lord's work, is to be able to fight against something that is so antithetical to human existence, to the organic nature, to natural law, to God's law, that is made up of the idea of faith, family, and folk, or, you know, in the case of the Russians, orthodoxy, autocracy, and nationality, the idea of the organic expressions of civil government, the organic expressions of what makes up a nation and a culture, that all of these things are being forced under attack, that the entire world is battling against this. And we need to be able to realize who our true foes are, that, you know, that while we can be frustrated with situations, and our humanitarianism doesn't mean that we have to let these people stay in Europe or in the United States, that their countries have been destroyed economically, socially, in some cases literally blown to pieces because of the globalists, because of the international Jews, because of their Gentile collaborators. This is what they battle for, that they want to be able to destroy everything that's within a nation so they can control the planet. So if they can break apart nations, if they can break apart the strength that we have, they can control all of us, because a divided, fractured people, and you can just see that in the United States, for instance, that they've done studies to prove that community trust goes down when an area is diverse, that people become, you know, isolated, they become insulated within their own communities, and they're not as strong as a community as they used to be. That diversity brings disunity, diversity brings ethnic conflict, diversity makes us weak. And that's a purposeful system. These are not accidents that the globalists are bringing about. These are purposeful plans to be able to destabilize European nations and nations around the world, to be able to make us easier to conquer for them. So these international elites can be able to control us and turn us into a mixed race world of consumers and of slaves, to be able to work on their international plantation. These are the enemies that we need to look at and to be able to understand who our true foes are. And that's something that I believe that the nationalist movements of the 20th century fundamentally understood. And of course, one nationalist that isn't spoken about enough is Father Charles Coughlin here in the United States. And he rose awareness about the Federal Reserve System, about the corrupt bankers. You know, Governor Huey Long of Louisiana, when he spoke about, and one of my favorite quotes, you've got to love Southerners for the ability, especially of the good orders, to take everyday examples and allow people to really understand some deep concepts. And of course, he said, I'm probably going to mangle the quote, but bear with me, that, you know, it's like you go to a restaurant now, and because he was talking about the Federal Reserve and the corruption of the bankers and the multinational corporations, that you go to a restaurant and you order a dish, and you know, whether a Republican or a Democratic waiter serves it to you, it was cooked in the same Wall Street kitchen. And that's something that's been going on now for over a century here in the United States, that these globalists have occupied the positions of power, the positions of economic power, of media power, of all sorts of power, to be able to give us, you know, options that aren't really options. There's no difference between the Republican and the Democratic establishment, because they are funded by the same donors. They are part of the same international coalitions and going to the Bilderberg meetings and things like that. They're the ones that have sold us out, and that they've controlled for a very long time politics within the United States and in Britain and in Western Europe. They forced us into brothers' wars, too, within the 20th century, in which millions of Europeans killed millions of others. And no one won in these wars, except for the international Jews and their Gentile collaborators. Those were the only victors of World War I and World War II. They, you know, that the greatest generation, you know, as they're called, was sent to kill and butcher their brothers and their sisters for the cause of internationalism. And that is truly tragic. And again, like, I can respect the heroism that many soldiers in the Red Army had, I can respect the heroism and the sacrifices made by American and British and French soldiers in this war, just as in World War I. I can respect the bravery on both sides. But at the end of the day, it's unfortunate that so many good men, millions of good men, lost their lives or were crippled in a brothers' war that never should have been fought. And if more people had fundamentally understood the fact that we as nationalists today need to understand that globalism is the enemy, that your fellow European is not your enemy, and you know, other races are not our enemies. It is the international Jew, the international bankers, and again, the Gentile collaborators who have united together to be able to destroy all of us, and they will use us against one another in ethnic conflict, in class war, and all these different factors to be able to make it easier for them to dominate us. So we need to understand that alliances are important, and to respect both our brothers and our sisters who might speak a different language than us, you know, who might worship a different faith, that, and also other ethnic communities around the world, that we're all on the same boat. You know, same enemy, same barricades is one of the phrases that I love, because we all are fighting the same enemy. Whether you're a Syrian nationalist, whether you're a Filipino nationalist, a Chinese nationalist, a Russian nationalist, a French nationalist, a Bulgarian nationalist, or an American nationalist, we are all opposing the exact same corrupt system, that we are fighting for the idea of liberty and sovereignty and self-determination. And that's something that we need to be able to always remember in this struggle. And that's why building international coalitions is so important. And it destroys the media narrative. Actually, a little bit of a funny story. I got an email last night from a producer who they didn't even say what show they were a part of. But they sent me an email saying, we are getting together a panel for daytime TV, and we need some white supremacists to come on. Would you like to come on and talk about, you know, being a white supremacist? And these people don't even understand. And again, this is the media that just goes along with these narratives of, you know, we believe in love of our own people. I don't believe in ethnic hatred of other communities. We believe in love. And I sent back a very snarky email to tell them, well, we're not white supremacists, so we can't really help you. You know, but we are nationalists. We do work with other ethnic communities to fight the shared enemy of globalism. And the media does such a good job of promoting the narrative of that nationalism, especially if you're European, is evil. Barack Obama was actually in Europe talking, I believe it was yesterday, it might have been the day before that, telling the British people that they shouldn't leave the European Union, that Europe should be united, you know, by control of, you know, by Brussels, and to not give in to nationalism. You know, Barack Obama was literally going saying, don't give in to the call of nationalism, you know, be part of this international system. And this is what the elites want. This is what their media whores do for them. This is what the banking institutions push for. That the establishment in whatever country you live in, with the exception of very few, including Russia, Iran, Lebanon, Syria, China, I believe, and other nations, formerly Venezuela, but of course the CIA and America got involved in their recent elections, funneling money to opposition parties to make the government that, even though it was a socialist revolution, it was anti-imperialist, it was anti-globalist, and now the West is trying to destroy that revolution and bring disunity and to bring everyone within the IMF and the International Bank and everything like that, and that's what they're battling for. That we can't be divided by the isms, because the isms are a very easy way for the globalist to divide us. As a white nationalist, as a right winger, I'm told that I need to hate people that have a different view on economics or things like that than me, who live in a different nation. But as the Traditionalist Worker Party believes in local solutions to the globalist problem, we believe that each ethnicity, each community can have solutions for their problems that fit their needs. And I've got more in common with a Muslim member of the Revolutionary Guard in Iran, or a Hugo Chavez leftist in Venezuela, than I do with a supposed right winger that believes, as National Review has talked about, fighting against racism and we need to be right wing. Well, these terms don't mean anything anymore. I mean, they do to us when it comes to ideology, to understand who we are. But on the global level, whoever you are, whatever your background is, whatever your view of economics is, that you are tied together with nationalists from around the globe, that this battle is something that will continue to rage, and we can't allow ourselves to be divided anymore. If we'd been able to go back and have a time machine and talk to the men who were about to land on Omaha Beach, in France, and be able to talk to them and say, if you do this, if you fight and you kill your brothers, what you'll see in 20 years is the federal government coming in at bayonet point to forcibly take away the will of the people and to determine what you do with your institutions. That in 30 years, you're going to have abortions that'll cost the lives of, at this point, nearly 60 million unborn babies. That if, in 50 years, you're going to be having homosexuality not just exist and be legal, but actively promoted to young children. And your sovereignty is going to be stripped away to where you'll live under a tyrannical Orwellian police state. I think if you were to go back in time and tell those men that they would have turned their guns on the other side, that they wouldn't have fought and killed their German brothers or their Czech brothers that were there that day. And if we could go and tell the people around the world, do not give in to the siren song of the globalists to allow old ethnic feuds or national feuds, based on history. I absolutely love and adore my Romanian and Hungarian comrades, but if I hear one more debate over Transylvania, I think I'm going to lose my mind. We cannot allow ourselves to be defined by petty conflicts, based in history or in small things of ideology. We need to understand that if we fight one another, if we fight fellow nationalists, fellow patriots, we are fighting to advance the cause of globalism. And it might not seem like that sometimes, but that is what the elites want. They did that in the First World War. The millions of men that lost their lives at Verdun and the Battle of the Somme and countless other conflicts, they were patriots. They were nationalists that were used as cannon fodder by the elites to destroy Europe, to try and destroy nationalism and make the system open to Bolshevism. And that's why after the war, you had so many attempted Bolshevik revolutions all throughout Europe. Because that was their plan, to overthrow the nationalist governments. They overthrew the monarchies, to strip sovereignty and to be able to make this international world. And that was stopped by brave men, for instance, in Germany, like the Freikorps, that put down these revolutions. But we need to be able to understand, again, that globalism is the enemy of all free peoples, of whatever your faith is, whatever your ideology is. If you believe in self-determination, globalism is trying to destroy that. And that's why, brothers and sisters, as we come to the end, if we go back to what the Metropolitan said, these Russian soldiers that were going to liberate their motherland, that we need to liberate our motherland, of Europe and help people liberate their motherlands around the world. Because globalism is a scourge. Globalism and internationalism is a poison. It is a cancer that will sit and it will rot, and it rots our morality. It destroys our families. It destroys our community. And it's trying to occupy all of us. And they've tried time and time again. But as Andrew Jackson, of course, with the, you know, being taken off the $20 bill, just as he fought back and had a nationalist revolution to fight the privately controlled central bank and to put economic sovereignty back into the hands of the people, just as the Germans fought and, you know, destroyed the Weimar Republic and made nationalism great again, we need to realize it is time now to unite around the world. Same enemy, same barricades, because nationalism will triumph. And we are doing the Lord's work, because nationalism is organic. It follows natural law, and it is truly the way human beings are supposed to live. So this inorganic system will be torn down. We will battle it. We will win if we stand together and we fight. So thank you guys so much. I'll look forward to seeing you with Sven tomorrow. We got a lot of topics to cover. Had a really great feedback from our shows last week, and I'm really excited to be able to continue these conversations. And as always, thank you guys so much for listening. Love you all to death. And keep fighting. You know, tomorrow is always too late. Go out there and do something today, as the song says. And we'll do that, because the battle of nationalism never sleeps. And we will be victorious. So thank you, guys. I'll talk to you tomorrow. And hail victory.
You've been tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArea.com.